Louisiana Community Services District Board of Directors meeting on September 30th. Can I ask Karen for, let's jump around a little bit and do a flag salute.
Okay.
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Karen. Pablo, do you want to do the roll call vote?
Yes, I will be filling in for Celia tonight, so I'll be multitasking and hopefully I can do it. But for roll call, Director Guerrero?
I'm present.
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
And President Lucy?
Here, thank you. And the agenda review, is there any changes? Anybody want to move things around just because? No?
No. Nope.
So can I get a motion to accept
the
agenda?
I move we approve the agenda.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? It passes. And let's do some public comment. Okay, so anybody who would like to speak to items that are not on the agenda tonight, this is your time. We ask that you keep it to 3 minutes. We do look forward to hearing from everybody. Mr. Ogren will be keeping the minutes tonight.
Yes.
Ms. Tacker.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker. And I don't know if you've heard, but I was a little bit surprised myself. The Northern Cities Management Area, including Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Arroyo Grande, has filed litigation against the Northern Napomo Mesa Management Area and the Napomo CSD and the host of purveyors in that area. And I don't know if you've had a chance to look at any of the documentation associated with the litigation that they're pursuing, but much of it speaks to seawater intrusion in Oceano, and you're not a party. So I'm interested to know what is your role. I think on the part of the basin and any seawater intrusion, as you know, we've talked about this many times, seawater intrusion was an anomaly in a monitoring well on Pier Avenue in 2009. You had a dirty well. You replaced that well. You had no indication that seawater intrusion is there today, even in the drought. So this litigation is peppered throughout all the documents, suggesting that's the reason that Napomo has to change, Napomo management area has to change the way they're doing things. They may need to change the way they're doing things anyway, but what I haven't heard from your board, what I don't know why you're not included in the Northern Cities Management Area litigation. I know you have different attorneys, but are your philosophies that different that you wouldn't join the litigation? I think they are, as I don't believe in the seawater intrusion fabrication. And then I would like to know more about what happens next. And again, what is the role of Oceano CSD in this very expensive and long-lasting? This is a huge commitment for your partners, and you're not acting like partners. So it just brings up a whole host of questions, and I don't know if there's ever a point when you can answer them, but hopefully there'll be some resolve soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to do public comment tonight? Hearing none. We're going to close public comment and go into special presentations and reports. Mr. Ogren.
Madam President, first up under 6A is Mr. Bill Worrell, manager of the San Luis Obispo County Integrated Waste Management Authority, and Mr. Fenton, who is representing South County Sanitary Services.
Good evening. I'm Bill Worrell, manager of the Integrated Waste Management Authority. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. Before I start, a little bit of trivia. About 15 years ago, remember, we all had those orange bins for recycling containers? Oceano, as I recall, was the very first community to switch to the blue commingled recycling. So 15 years ago, you led the way in recycling. That now everybody does it that way, and it's a pleasure to be back here to talk to you again. Tonight, I'm going to talk about organics management. As you heard, I'm from the Integrated Waste Management Authority, which is a joint powers agency. We include the seven cities, the county, plus there's a special district representative on our board. So we have a 13-member board of directors. And tonight, organics management has been a hot topic. We've discussed this every meeting since 2013 at our board, trying to come up with regional solutions. And why organics management? Because we need to increase the amount of material coming out of the landfill. Right now, we have programs for most items, you know, bottles, cans, newspapers. We don't really have a good program for organics at this point. We also want to reduce our greenhouse gases from landfills. In California, landfills are one of the primary sources of greenhouse gases. And we want to recover beneficial products. We can recover compressed natural gas, electricity, compost, compost tea. So all those are options from a really good organics program. So several years ago, AB 341 was passed, and that requires every community to have a goal of a 75% diversion by 2020. So last year, our diversion rate in this county, which we measure on a countywide basis, was 67%, or about 243,000 tons going to the landfill. To achieve 75% by 2020, we have to reduce our waste to the landfill by another 60,000 tons. The other big law that passed last year was no credit for diversion from alternative daily cover. In California, by state law, you have to cover your garbage every night at the landfill with 6 inches of dirt. If you use something other than dirt, that's called alternative daily cover. In our county, we use green material for cover. So we get diversion credit for it, which is really not right because it's still going in the landfill, but at least we're getting to count it as not being buried in the landfill, but as being recycled. That ability to count that goes away in 2020. So it makes it even more difficult to meet the 75% diversion goal doing what we're doing today. So additional diversion strategies. How are we going to get that extra 60,000 tons? Well, first we want to maximize our existing programs. Curbside recycling programs are great. We can always do better. So we're going to try and get more and more diversion from those programs, the blue bin that you have at your homes and in all the businesses. The second one is construction and demolition recycling. Every project that goes through the process is supposed to recycle at least 50% of their construction and demolition material. We'd like to see that increase. And finally, we need to optimize the green waste diversion program. And by doing that, we're not going to be using it for alternative daily cover anymore. Plus, we want to add food waste to the program. Food waste is a very big component of our waste stream with no programs to date to really manage those. Now, AB 1826 requires that starting next April 1st, any business that generates 8 yards of food waste and organics a week has to recycle that material. That's a lot of material, and I would doubt there's anybody in Oceano that meets that threshold. However, next year it goes down to 6 yards, and then it goes down to 4 yards. So that number keeps getting ratcheted down over the next couple of years. The other thing that's happened is CalRecycle just passed new compost regulations last month, as did the State Water Resources Control Board. So it's getting more difficult to recycle to compost using the traditional method. The other thing going on is the California Air Resources Board did a paper on how to eliminate organics from the landfills to reduce greenhouse gases. Their goal is a 75% diversion by 2020, ratcheting it up to a 90% diversion of organics from the landfill. And to achieve that, they're estimating we're going to need another 100 facilities throughout the state of California. So given all of these driving factors, we've been working on trying to come up with a comprehensive regional strategy that will help us get to these goals. So right now in our county, we have basically three options. Engle and Gray in Santa Maria has been taking green waste. They take it from Oceano currently. Mid-State Solid Waste up in Templeton has a compost operation that can take green waste and food waste. And finally, Waste Connections has looked at using HCI at their site for an anaerobic digestion facility, which is a type of a composting facility, only it generates useful byproducts in addition to the compost and compost tea. So in April, Waste Connections asked these three providers for proposals. And those providers came to our board in May and made a presentation. And based on that information, Waste Connections, and along with the IWMA who endorsed it, are looking at two solutions. The first is a short-term solution, and that would be add food waste to all your residential waste generators. So if you have a green waste bin at your home, what will happen is after January 1st, you'll get a little pail for your kitchen, and then you can put all your food waste in that pail, which can then go to the green waste. So that's going to allow us to add food waste collection at residential service. The second thing we want to do is start a commercial food waste program, partially to comply with the law that says it's mandated, but also because it's a good way of diverting materials from the landfill. So initially, for the next year and a half, the strategy would be to bring that material to the Cold Canyon landfill and transfer it to Engle and Gray for composting. Now, Engle and Gray's facility, I don't know if anybody's been down to see it, but it's basically a classic old-style windrow facility. Basically, you create these little rows of material. So you grind all the material, put them in the rows, and let it sit there and compost. Here's kind of a close-up of what it looks like. And you can see the truck right here. So the rows are about the size of a truck and maybe about 10 feet high. And they'll sit there for months and they'll compost. Now, the problem with this methodology is you can see no stormwater control, no air emissions control. I mean, this is how it's been done for many, many years in California. But as you recall, I talked about all those new regulations that passed last month. Going to make it very difficult to continue to do this into the future. And again, one more picture of Engle and Gray's facility. On the other hand, Engle and Gray has been a very good partner. They've managed a lot of the green waste from this county. They also take a lot of the biosolids from the county and compost it at their site. But the long-term solution is an anaerobic digestion facility, which is a fully enclosed facility, state-of-the-art, and would be placed at the Waste Connections yard near the city of San Luis. And HCI CompoGas would design, build, and operate that facility, including financing it, for 20 years. So essentially, they would be responsible for making it work for a fixed fee over that 20-year period. They have numerous facilities around the world, but this would be the first one in the United States. They're a Swiss company. And as you probably know, the Europeans are much more advanced with their solid waste technology than in America. So here's the site. Right to the north is the airport, but that's Waste Connections Yard in the red outline there. So that big building right there would be available for the composting operation. And just to give you an idea, here's this is right outside of the city of Zurich. So in the blue is a CompoGas anaerobic digestion facility. So you can see it's right in an area with a lot of commercial activities. Just to the top left are a bunch of homes very close to the site. Fully enclosed, there's a gas pump. They make compressed natural gas that you can fill up your vehicles at that site. And to pay for this would require basically a one-time rate increase to cover the cost of both the short-term and the long-term solutions and a franchise extension. So the rate increase, our goal at the IWMA was to come up with a project to handle all your organics throughout the IWMA region serviced by Waste Connections, which goes from Cambria all the way to Napomo. And our goal was less than $1 a month per resident and between 1% and 3% on commercials. And it just happens, you know, every community has a different rate depending on their local situation. Here it would be a 1.1% increase. So you're at definitely the low end, and that certainly translates to a lot less than a dollar a month for the residents. Now, to fund it, we also need a franchise extension because the facility is going to be in about the $13 million cost range. So it's like, you know, paying for your house. You can pay for the capital cost over 10 years or 20 years. If we fund it over 20 years, it's basically a $32 a ton charge for that. Over 10 years, it just means you have to pay off the money quicker. It would be $56 a ton. So to keep that range at the 1.1%, we're looking at a 20-year franchise extension because what's going to happen is Waste Connections will provide that building to CompoGas to build the facility for 20 years. But at the same time, they're going to have to guarantee taking green waste to the facility and food waste to the facility. So that company who's going to borrow the money probably from the state of California through the Pollution Control Financing Authority will have the money to pay the bonds off. So for Waste Connection to be able to make that guarantee of delivering the organics, they need a franchise extension from all the communities to have that waste to guarantee it. And in addition, there'd be capital improvements made at the facility. For example, we're looking at doing a complete CNG fueling station. So this facility would make compressed natural gas and fuel the garbage trucks. What's nice about that is we set a price of, let's say, $2.50 a gallon of diesel equivalent for the price of the natural gas. Well, we can lock that in for 20 years. So if 3 years from now, the price of diesel doubles, well, it doesn't matter. It's not going to impact the ratepayers because that gas price through the CNG has been locked in for the length of the contract. So there's financial benefits to having a longer-term lock-in. So basically, that's what we're looking at for organics, both short-term and long-term, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about that.
Karen?
20 years to me seems like, won't the technology be changing so much that in 20 years it'll be completely out of old-fashioned, they'll be doing something else?
No, you know, we've been working on this project for 6-7 years now, and this is the state of the art. There's right now only one other large anaerobic digestion facility opened in California a year ago. What's changing is that Engle and Gray, the old style Windrose, those are the ones that are going to go out of service because they're just not going to be able to meet the environmental standards. But we're really confident that this technology is going to continue to be state of the art. The first plant opened in Europe was in 1991, and it's still operating. So, you know, given how hard it is to site facilities and given the advanced nature of this, we don't see anything in the next 20 years that would be more state-of-the-art than this facility.
Thank you.
I have a question, Mr. Merlin. Actually, you answered all of my questions I had at the time during your presentation. It was very well done. Thank you. The food waste program that you're looking at and providing a bucket for people's countertops, that'd be everything, bread, meat,
yeah,
table
everything.
Scraps?
Meat, bread, eggshells. The one thing we're going to probably do that might be different than you've seen in other places is we're not going to allow things like wax cardboard.
Okay.
Some places allow that, but you know, next to water, soil is our next most precious resource, and do you really want to put wax cardboard in your soil? I mean, it's like this is such a valuable resource. We should protect it. And, you know, if we have to throw that wax cardboard away because you can't recycle it and we're not letting you compost it, I think that's probably a trade-off that's better than trying to say we can compost any, you know, piece of paper or any wax boxes. And so, yeah, it would be a little bit more restricted than you may have seen in other places.
Is it okay now to continue to do that with bread and meat and eggshells to put that into your green waste, or will this be a separate, are you not prepared for it yet?
Yeah. So in California, there's two types of compost facilities, permitted compost facilities. Ones that only do green waste and ones that do green waste and food waste. The ones that do green waste and food waste have more regulations and more restrictions. Well, England Gray's facility actually is allowed to do the food waste. So if this community's waste was going to England Gray, in theory you could do it now, but they would then charge a higher rate, because right now they're just charging the green waste rate because that's all you're giving them. So that's one of the reasons we're having this increase, is because we're going to have them change that to include food as an allowable material, and then they will adjust the rate and we'll be able to handle it. So yes, in the future you'll be able to do it for all the organics.
Okay, just not yet.
But not yet.
Okay.
But after January 1st, we're only talking three months.
3 months away, yeah, that's close.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
Jen, do you have any questions?
I don't.
Lori?
No.
I have a couple for
sure.
You.
Sure.
You had mentioned that the franchise would be extended.
Right.
Can you elaborate on that just a little bit for us?
Sure. So right now, I would guess you've got 6 or 7 years left on your franchise agreement. You did a 15-year extension about 7 or 8 years ago to pay for the expansion of the landfill. So what we would be asking, really the garbage company would be asking for, is an extension that says when the plant opens, which we hope will be 2017, you will give them a 20-year window of guaranteeing the waste stream to the plant. Now, if the plant doesn't open for whatever reason, you know, we can't get the permit, the financing becomes too expensive, then that extension would not take effect. It would only happen if the plant opens, and then at that point it would be for the 20-year operating period of the facility. Now, we think the facility will operate a lot longer than that, but that would be the term that we pay it off over.
Okay. That helps. Also, too, is, you know, we do an update, you know, an increase in garbage. I don't want to say every year, but about every 14 months, I think, or 16 months, there's an increase. But this one's a little bit different than the other ones in that this one is to expand services and to develop more services.
Right.
So is the increase, is the regular yearly increase going to be in addition to this, or are you going to, I don't understand financially how that works. I understand how you need these funds, right?
Yeah.
But are you still going to do another increase for regular operations?
Yeah, your rate increase has three components.
Okay.
It has basically the cost of living increase, the cost of fuels have gone up, the cost of labor has gone up.
Correct.
And what you have, it's called the San Luis rate model. And that says every year you basically get a cost of living for the first 2 years. And the third year, there's kind of an audit done that then resets it so the profits fix that back at 8%, whether it's gone up or down. So every 3 years there's this audit, but then in the interim you do cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
The second component is when the landfill expanded, they needed more money to pay for all the 140 conditions that the county put on. So there's a fixed amount every year for the landfill expansion. And this is the third piece. It's a one-time charge to implement the organic program. Now, once you've implemented the organic program, that becomes part of that annual cost of living increase in future years, but there's no more special 1.1% charge. So, Pat, I think it's about 3% for all three.
Well, Pat Fenton from South County Sanitary. It's 1% for the organics, and that will be for the pail.
Okay.
That we're talking about doing. To answer your question, President Lucy, it's 1.34% for the normal price increase. But just so you know, I know you saw Tom Martin and I here in the middle of last year, but we were actually still working on the price increase in 2013. So there was no increase last year.
Yes.
It just seemed like it because it drug out so long. And that's because the county was working some kind of arrangements with my parent company on how to deal with this 8-year landfill deal. So we have to do $8 million worth of improvements. So that was a special thing. That's why everything drug over. But there was no increase last year. And then the last piece is the landfill at 0.81%. So all in with the normal increase, the organics piece, and the landfill, it's 3.25%.
Okay, great.
Which is extremely low, if you consider we didn't have anything last year.
Right.
And, you know, we're hoping this whole thing works with CompoGas. And as far as the CNG fuel, I just want to make sure, yes, we would fuel our own trucks, but we would still have to pay CompoGas for the CNG fuel. And just so you know, out of the 86 frontline trucks I have right now, 24 of them are CNG. So we're, as our fleet ages and they're getting older, we're going to replace them a diesel for a CNG. So our goal is to be 100% CNG, you know, God knows when, but that's our goal, and to turn garbage into fuel and then leave that, you know, footprint out there. And, you know, we're permitted to do everything CompoGas wants to do, and we just happen to have the facility that's permitted for the most part, and, you know, it would be right there. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Great, thank you. And then I have one more question for you, sir. So this is more from the practical side, you know. So a lot of us do compost our green and our chicken, you know, our shells and things like that. But we don't compost cooked food. And there's usually a reason for that, because the stench and bugs and
rats
and rats. All the things that come along with it, plus it's not very beneficial for what we use it for. So maybe you could talk us into convincing us to keep a garbage pail full of garbage on the counter. I mean, I'm going to have a little trouble doing it, and I run a pretty greenhouse, you know, so talk me through it.
Yeah, it's a special pail. It's got a filter in it. It's aerated. It's made specifically for that use. And then every couple of days, you just take it out and then drop it in your green waste container. So it's not like it sits on your counter for a whole week. My kids live up in Livermore, and they have the pail just like the ones we're thinking about getting for you guys. And it's used a lot of places. There is that ick factor. I mean, there's no question about it. But it's been very successful in other communities. So I think it's going to work here.
Okay, great. Thank you. Does anybody else have any other questions?
The ick factor.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Is there anybody from the audience who has any questions? Yes,
Mr.
sir.
Mr. Carter.
Yes, John Carter, out of Oceana.
Can you come up to the mic, please?
Absolutely. This is a question. My name is John Carter. I live in Oceana.
Hi, John.
Right across the street from the San Luis Obispo County Sanitation Facility. Did I see a picture of the footprint of where this facility was going to be, and is it in that area where this existing sanitation facility is?
You clarify that, please.
It's on Old Santa Fe Road in San Luis Obispo, off of Buckley Road. Is that?
Okay, so it's not even in the ocean?
No.
Okay.
Unless you want it here, we can move it.
We're already carrying our load. Okay, is there anybody else who'd like to speak on this issue? Is there anything that staff would like to add?
Just real quickly, so the process for your board's consideration is that on October 28th is going to be the public hearing, the protest hearing on Prop 218 and the proposed rate increase. To clarify again, that 3.25% proposed increase includes the cost of the food and organic composting program. It will be then at a subsequent meeting, and it would be intended to be at your November meeting, then the issue of the franchise extension would come back to your board.
Okay, great. Thank you. So do we need to, we don't need to make a motion.
Yeah, no action, presentation okay. Item only.
Well, I want to thank you gentlemen for coming out today and explaining that. I'd spoke to you a little bit earlier about some of the policies, and you want to just address that real quickly, or
is that what you were talking about, the $5 charge?
Yeah.
Is that what your concern
is? Yeah.
Okay. That's called extras, and what it is if your lid's open, and, you know, I apologize to you, President Lucy, already told you that. We try to use, you know, common sense, but if a cart is open, for example, and there's stuff completely flowing out of it, that adds to the disposal cost at the landfill, and that's why we just couldn't operate like that. But if it's an inch or 2 inches, please let me know, and, you know, these guys are trying to do the best they can, mm-hmm. but... You know, it's interpretation, but I'll talk to my drivers about that. And we're not doing this to overcharge anybody. No, we want to continue our relationship.
And actually, I have to say is that I've never lived in a place where the garbage guys and women have been so conscientious about, you know, throwing cans and leaving trash. I mean, it just never, ever occurs in our area.
We appreciate that.
I mean, the cans do break quite a bit. I mean, but... You get a broken can,
But, you know, and this new organics thing will be a big challenge because we start picking up commercial. It's going to be pretty nasty. And, like, you know, you throw the stuff in there. So for my guys, you know, we're trying to work through it. It's not going to be that pleasant, but we're just trying to accommodate
the
state.
Okay, so just for the sake of the community, if your can I am an offender. I know,
we talked about it.
You know. I'm notorious for having it open about that much. But if people do have their can open just a little bit, right, mm-hmm. can they just call and leave a message and say, my can's open a couple inches. Please take that into consideration.
We'll
call the number on the side of the can or something.
Yeah, my operations manager, Rigo Diaz, and Peter Quaglino, who's actually a supervisor here in South County, they're both here tonight on their own. So. They've heard the message from you, so, you know, I'll talk with them. But, you know, we'll do the best we can to help the community out.
Okay, well, we really appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Moving right along. Are we going to talk about Senate Bill 107, or do we want to do... go ahead.
Madam President, members of the board... Director Guerrero identified this. I had been following Assembly Bill 2 and asked through some discussions that I do a brief presentation on SB 107 and Assembly Bill 2. Both bills described by the Governor Brown's office as providing local governments with, quote, more economic development tools to help improve struggling communities. Out of the two bills, SB 107 is really a lot of cleanup language associated with the dissolution of redevelopment agencies in California that occurred a couple years ago. It was 77 pages altogether, so I did a little bit of speed reading on it. But it was clear that it was really addressing cleanup language in redevelopment agencies. And then it had a lot of specifics for different areas, issues that naturally came up as they were working through their dissolution process. And so it had to help address the dissolution of redevelopment agencies throughout California on some specifics. But there hasn't been a redevelopment agency for Oceano, so it's really non-applicable for us here. Assembly Bill 2, however, creates new community revitalization authorities, and so this is new law. It's the third effort by Assemblyman Alejo to reestablish some of the authorities associated with redevelopment agencies. And his first two attempts, the first one did not get through the legislature. The second one did, however, Governor Brown vetoed it. And so this third attempt was to, in part, not call it redevelopment agencies anymore since those were being dissolved, but to instead use the community revitalization approach. But it still has a lot of similar features like redevelopment agencies do, and one of them is using incremental tax funding. And the basic theory there is that if these public improvements, whether it's for low and moderate income housing or whether it's for infrastructure or the various purposes that are approved both here as well as what was common in redevelopment agencies, that by making those improvements, the tax base grows faster than it would have otherwise grown, and so that additional amount of incremental taxes then is what helps to pay for redevelopment or the new term, the revitalization. Thank you. The So incremental tax funding is common to both. One of the differences, however, is that in revitalization, it's really a voluntary effort by cities, counties, and special districts. School districts are not part of the plan anymore, and it's purely voluntary, versus redevelopment agencies, when they went through the process, could have actually obtained some of the incremental tax funding that would have otherwise gone to school districts. So there is a significant difference between redevelopment and the revitalization program. I also note there that the process associated with doing following Assembly Bill 2 is subject to protest hearings, and it may be subject to voter approval depending on different levels. But that's speaking to a detail that's really beyond the overview that I wanted to cover today. The intent is to invest the increment revenues to relieve conditions of unemployment, high crime rates, repair deteriorated or inadequate infrastructure, promote affordable housing, and promote and improving conditions leading to employment opportunities. So again, a lot of the same type of overarching intent as what we saw in redevelopment agencies. There are two options. One is the county can create this new revitalization authority, or the county and OCSD could enter into a JPA, and if the boundaries were to include the cities, like whatever the disadvantaged portions of Grover Beach might be, then there could be a three-party JPA, the county, the city of Grover Beach, and Oceano. In terms of the new governing board, it would be a separate entity. It would have its own governing board, and by the statute, it would have to have a majority of the board members of each of the agencies that's participating. So if it was county only, then it would have to at least have three members of the Board of Supervisors. If it was the county and Oceano, then it would have to have at least three members of your board, as well as three members of the county, and so forth if a city was to join on into it, and a minimum of two public members who live or work within the community. Obviously, the idea of a new type of an agency or an entity then always brings in the question of what's the additional layer of government and the additional cost of associated with administration of such an entity. In order to create this type of an authority, three or four conditions must be met. Non-seasonal unemployment has to be at least 3% higher than the state median. Crime rates have to be at least 5% higher than the statewide median. And I got a typo in there, but there has to be deteriorated or inadequate infrastructure or deteriorated commercial or residential structures. So those last two points themselves kind of go back to the redevelopment agency's discussions about blight, because in a redevelopment agency, you had to be able to define blight. And so here they're pulling forward some of those theories, but being very specific on deteriorations of infrastructure or commercial and residential structures. For Oceano, the idea of can we meet three out of those four criteria, I don't know. Also, Assembly Bill 2, a revitalization plan is required. A lot of details associated with that revitalization plan. For example, what's the infrastructure that would be intended to be replaced? What would be the approach to the affordable housing component? And 25% of the amount of the tax increment designated shall be allocated for affordable housing. So how might this work? Because if Oceano CSD were to participate in a program like this, the property tax revenue coming to OCSD right now is almost entirely dedicated to fire services. That would mean that 25% of the increments in the future, and you don't have to dedicate, it wouldn't be a dedication of all the incremental, it would be a designated amount of incremental tax revenues. But essentially, that 25% of the designation then would no longer be available for infrastructure, and the entire designation would not be directly available for the fire department. So it would have a potential negative effect on the amount of tax revenues available to the fire department. And to the extent that your board has tax revenue at any time in the future that's greater than the amount that's needed for fire and for lighting, well, you currently have the authority to dedicate that money for infrastructure anyhow. It's your property tax money is essentially free for you to use for any purpose of the district. So participating in this type of a program would carve out some of it that might otherwise be available to fire and or infrastructure under your board's current authority. Now, again, you step back and you say, would this type of a program work, however, in order to help bolster tax revenues greater than we would have otherwise collected? And if that strategy were to work out, then you'd still have the money available for fire and other purposes. But in any case, that 25% dedicated for affordable housing, it's a strict requirement in there. And then for the OCSD to participate in something like this, we'd have to be a partner with the county. And so would there be enough compelling reason for the county to even want to consider it? There is, I suppose, an underlying strategy that if 25% of our money and 25% of the county's money is dedicated for affordable housing, then the other 75% of the county's money might be able to come back and help with the infrastructure that is currently, you know, part of OCSD. So there is a strategy there where we might get more coming back to us than what we're giving up. But again, that would be separate from fire department. The real question in my mind is, to what extent would it compel the county to want to pursue affordable housing programs in Oceano? And if they had sufficient motivation, or if they were so compelled, as well as to help with other infrastructure, then a possibility might exist. But it really would start with, is the county interested in this program, and how might they see it developing? And would they see Oceano as a potential partner? Because out of their tax revenues, they certainly already have the freedom to do it independent of Oceano CSD. So that's my quick overview of AB 2, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any directors have any questions?
And thank you, Papa, for going through this, and so I didn't have to read it. I wouldn't have, but I'm just sitting here digesting it, wondering if there's room for further discussion, or if we should maybe a strategic planning or something, go through further discussion and see what might be available.
Yeah, I think that, well, the legislation goes into effect, in 2016. It doesn't go into effect immediately. And if your board is so interested, I think the follow-up dialogue would really be with the county to see whether or not they're even interested in the program, if they see opportunities here or not. Because in order for a special district to participate, it has to be with a JPA, with a county or a city.
And would that come through the CDBG department with Tony Navarro? Would that come through the block grant?
I can inquire with the county as to how they might address it and what staff might be addressing it. There's probably a little bit of a logic that if they were going to look at it, then it would be the same people as who are working on CDBG, since that money, so a portion of that money is allocated for affordable housing purposes.
Okay. Thanks, Pavel.
Certainly.
Appreciate that. Okay. Is there anybody who wants to do public comment on Pavel's 6B, explain the different legislative issues? No? Okay. Go ahead.
You have a spot on here for them? Did you want to stick to them?
No, go ahead.
Thank you, Pavel, for that. The only thing that I thought about was the demands on your property tax already, and that the fire department has a huge list of unmet needs, and if there was any way to have more latitude or more fire or more property tax, that would go to those needs. I mean, you would immediately send that money there. And then looking on sort of the flip side, in the situation that you're in currently financially, you have internal debt, you have the Standard & Poor's rating with the dam, and so I just don't know that you have an ideal situation currently until you resolved the past to venture down another avenue that may not pan out. I mean, even this amount of time for Paavo to spend researching, I wish there had been a staff report, because then I would have known before I got here. But I just think you have things to take care of more immediately, and that you could be sort of kicked out of the running early. So I hate to see you waste much time on that. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Paavo, for doing the presentation to help us determine where we stand in this process and if it's even appropriate for us. And clearly, your explanation helped me on that. So thank you. Anybody else want to make any comments or anything? Okay. Tony, let's have you go first, sir. Mr. Tony Maricino keeps all our waters flowing.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. Just want to give you a little follow-up about an article that KSBY did on the 18th of September regarding the five cities and surrounding areas having a taste and odor complaint, you know, throughout the public of the five cities and surrounding area. It's been, there's a recent and temporary increase in the blue-green algae in Lopez and State Water. It is safe to drink. We continue to give the consumers water that meets all the standards. I just want to reassure the public that it is safe to drink. Carbon filters will help out at your house, but we are aware of it, and it is safe.
You go first.
As for the past few weeks, we've had 23 work orders, 13 USAs, 17 customer service calls. We had one call after hours call out to turn on a meter. We had meter reads. We had common codes for notifications for leaks, high consumption, low consumptions. We had a line break on Honolulu last week that we had to replace the entire service line going to the house. Mm. We've had to replace a few meters once we did meter reads, raise a few boxes. We were currently on a service line that broke at 2300 this week at the park. And we are aware of another leak that's currently there that's about 50 gallons a day that we're going to take care of either at the end of this week or beginning of next week. So we've been staying busy.
So you've been digging some holes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Out in the sun every day.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Tony? You know, let's talk about this blue-green algae a little bit. You know, when I lived up on the Eel River, right, the eel is notorious for getting that algae. I mean, it's just, it's going to happen every year. Hell or high water, it's going to happen, right?
Yes, it does happen.
And the levels were so high, right, that everybody was advised to stay out of the water. And, of course, it was in the summertime and not to drink the water. But that was super, super high levels.
That's correct.
And it was notorious, and it happened twice a year like clockwork, where this is, it's kind of a hit and miss. You know, it's not that bad. It's bad enough to make a comment about it, but not bad enough to put anybody's health at risk.
Correct, but you're also referring to water that is untreated. When you're talking
yes.
about the lake
yes.
swimming in, yes. All the water that the consumers are getting is treated.
Right. No, they didn't even want us in the river.
Correct.
You know, so, yeah, it was very different. So, okay, well, thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Sir.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay. Sheriff's Department. No sheriffs tonight. Okay. So, who would like to do the Five Cities Fire Authority? Is there anything to report on the five cities, Karen?
We almost had a fire.
No, you did have a fire.
Yeah, we did have a fire.
We did have a fire.
We almost had a fire that could have damaged a significant portion of Oceana's downtown.
Yeah.
And at the back side of Ephraim's on the wash porch. And they tell me it was spontaneous combustion from greasy rags, and it somebody was passing by on Front Street at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30, something like that, and noticed it and called 911, and the system worked. Considering the person was on Front Street and the report of the fire came in on Front Street, which is also Highway 1, which is also Cienega, but it was on the back side of Ephraim's, which was about half a block in, but it was on the Front Street side. And the fire department came in, they put it out, and there was very little smoke damage or anything in the actual restaurant, and they were open the next morning.
Pavel, let me ask you. There is one place that we repeatedly have problems with grease complying with the fats, oils, and grease program. Is there anything? I mean, now it's become, you know, a hazard to local people. You know, I don't want to wake up to a grease fire, and I'm sure nobody else wants to either.
So the FOG program right now is being administered by South San Luis Obispo County, the Sanitation District. So we will follow up with them on that particular item.
Please. So in the FOG program, and I haven't read the guidelines real clear, does it say you can just put greasy rags in a barrel?
Well, that's certainly not advisable, just like staining materials. You know, if you're staining wood products and you have stain that's in a rag, if you take these things and you just dumping in a bucket or whatever, then, yeah, you're at risk of spontaneous combustion. The FOG program's primary intent is the disposal of fats, oil, and greases down into the wastewater system, which is why we're working with the Sand District on it. And I don't know that there's a direct tie between the FOG program and what they do in greasy rags and put them into buckets. Certainly that's not a safe practice, but that's a detail that we'll follow up with the Sand District then.
Okay, so somebody will follow up.
Yes.
See if we can cut it down. Has there been any other?
This is their third fire. Two at their facility, and they caught me on fire one time after smoking me out three other times, where they would come, and I'd spoken with the people that work at Ephraim's at least six times, probably 10 times, about their grease treatment on their rags, and they stare at me blankly and don't respond. And so I had probably impolitely asked them not to come back. On Super Bowl Sunday of 2013, the fire department had to respond to my facility because it was on fire from their rags. And so they're also backed up the sewer that time, and we spent $1,200 of ratepayer money to jet the sewer from their dumping grease into it. What we assume was they're dumping grease into it. So it's something that, you know, we want this business to succeed, of course, but they've got to be good neighbors, not dangerous. So
is there any kind of fine situation after so many things like this happen to them, or can they be closed down because of it?
Well, again, to the extent that then we're sort of switching from fog into fire hazard types of situations, and I'll need to follow up with Chief Lieberman with Vice City's Fire Authority.
I'm sure that Chief Lieberman is following this up.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I have had, the Vice City's Fire Authority contacted me
5 a.m.
before
on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, they put it out pretty quickly, obviously. They responded and got the situation under control. But the communications on these type of things starts immediately. And then we'll have follow-up, so I'll make sure to continue to follow up with Chief Lieberman as well.
Yeah, I didn't get called till 8 a.m. Ha ha.
You're fortunate.
Did you get called?
No, I didn't get called at all.
I called you.
Did you?
I left your message.
I should check my messages.
All right. So, Zone 3 Advisory Committee, Mr. Ogren.
Yes, Madam President. Couple of things as quick updates and one significant action. As the quick updates, the work on the habitat conservation plan and the new flow regime that's being updated is progressing. The target was to have a new analysis out this fall, and we're expecting to see new information pretty soon. So we got a quick update on the habitat conservation plan. We also adopted a letter for the Board of Supervisors consideration, where through the Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee and then the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. We want to have a workshop with the Board of Supervisors in the near future regarding what are the water supply options, both emergency and long-term. These efforts have been directly led by staff of the City of Arroyo Grande. I've participated in the discussions and provided some feedback. But at Zone 3, a formal letter has been adopted, and I signed it today for the County Board of Supervisors. And it sort of ties into the update that we also got on the Diablo desalinization project. I had previously reported that to your board. Your board had essentially taken the position that's supportive of that, having evaluated, however, not interested in actually paying for the cost associated with it because there are other agencies that have a greater need for both emergency and long-term water supply options. But the Board of Supervisors has approved about $300,000 for County Public Works to further evaluate the options of using Diablo water. And that report is due back to the Board of Supervisors after the first of the year. The current target is in January. So the basic discussions right now is, can we have a workshop with the Board of Supervisors on the various options about the same time that they're going to be revisiting the Diablo option? I like that idea because then we'll have a discussion with the Board of Supervisors on the wide range of options. Again, so that was an action item that the Zone 3 Advisory Committee took at the last meeting. And then the item of significance was the continued support and then ultimately the Board of Supervisors' approval of the 2014 change in accounting for water deliveries. This was an action that was initiated by your board last December, recognizing that state water was brought into the Zone 3 area and requesting that the accounting of the Lopez water deliveries we had received was changed to state water deliveries and to better reflect the actual water that we did obtain. That required actions by all of the agencies. Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach all supported it. Pismo Beach also chose to do a reaccounting for some of their deliveries, as did Avila Beach Community Services District. And the net effect of it all is by changing our deliveries from Lopez to state water, then we're now able to take advantage of the low reservoir response plan that was adopted in 2014 and the amount of Lopez water that we have stored behind Lopez during this drought emergency almost doubled. So now we have over 700 acre feet of water in storage at Lake Lopez, currently relying this year purely on state water and a little bit of groundwater pumping, which means that in 2016, we can see another allocation of Lopez water. The bottom line is that puts the community of Oceano in a good situation if the drought continues, that the basic strategy of continuing to take state water deliveries and store our Lopez water is good. In the event that state water gets shut off, then that amount stored in Lopez equals about 1 year worth of supply under the current demand scenario and conservation. And as previously discussed with your board, if we do lose state water and we know there's limited groundwater right now, then I'd come back in a discussion about additional conservation requirements, mandatory conservation, in order to get that amount stored in Lopez water to be able to last at least 2 years. And so, you know, the bottom line is that the Board of Supervisors did take the action after the Advisory Committee made its final endorsement, you know, the amount of storage behind Lopez specifically dedicated to Oceano has now been maximized and put us in about as good a situation we can as the drought continues.
That's great news. I know that, you know, I've been paying attention to Oceano and state water, and I think I moved here just as the vote was going through to bring state water into Oceano. And I know there was a lot of hesitancy and people were complaining about the cost of money and what if the state didn't, you know, produce and, you know, all the horror stories you could possibly imagine. And then, you know, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, we actually had somebody who tried to sell our state water rights out from underneath us, and the community stood up and rose to the occasion and stopped that. And this is a perfect example as to
fighting for your rights. You know, we wouldn't have that water had we not fought for that. We would have lost that money that we put into state water. And so I think the people of Oceano really need to feel good about, you know, standing up for their rights, you know, taking charge of what they had rightfully paid for, and now it's beginning to pay off, because like you said, you know, the state and the county have an agreement, and we get such a small amount that as long as the county gets their water, we will always get our water.
And if I might, just to clarify that point, because of course throughout California there's a lot of concerns about the reliability of the state water project. And in San Luis Obispo County and Oceano specifically, we're in a lot better position than everybody else in the state, because our county's allocation of state water is more than five times their commitment to local agencies. Mm-hmm. And as a result, if the county, if the state just provides a 20% delivery year, then those of us who are getting state water can essentially get our 100% allocation. That is the scenario this year. The state is delivering at 20%. Oceano is getting 100% of their allocation. Now, there are some provisions that if this drought continues and health and safety needs prevail in other communities, we might see some cutbacks. But certainly our position means that we will get our health and safety needs met as long as the county is getting state water. They even provided a scenario where I think a 10% delivery a year and we'll still get 100% of our allocation. So certainly there are concerns about state water on a statewide basis. Our situation here in San Luis Obispo County and Oceano specifically differs, and I think that's a good point for clarification on people who are following it, because otherwise they're, how can we be in a good situation, but yet we've heard so many things about reliability concerns in state water. Again, it just happens to be our unique situation on the Central Coast.
And it does give a good example of the power of community control over our little community government. You know, we were able to stand up and fight for our rights, and sometimes, you know, when you lose that, you know, grassroots level community control, that's when you lose your assets. So
the development of the Lodzo Reservoir Response Plan in 2014, and then on this change in accounting for 2014, you know, again, there's appreciation to go out to all of our neighboring agencies, Grover and Arroyo Grande and Pismo and Avila, for all agreeing to it and taking formal actions in support.
Right. And thank you for your hard work on that, too, because before, when we weren't operating under the low reservoir response plan, you couldn't really store water in that reservoir.
That's correct.
And with putting that plan in place, as the reservoir became lower and lower, we were able to move our state water closer to home and able to store it in that reservoir. So thank you very much for your hard work on that. I know it was extremely strategic. Okay, so anybody else have anything they want to add? Then we'll do all the committees. Miss Angelo.
Except for me. Okay, I didn't attend any meetings, but I've had a lot of communication with local people here in town that are concerned about the airport. An article came out in the newspaper today, and it refers to a company that's going to be making parts and has an X-plane that's a smaller plane that they're working with to make some changes as far as parts, research in the airline and tool development, that type of thing is what they're working on. And it got out that they were going to be flying these huge planes out of Oceano. So I kind of looked into it. I talked to one of the people that had approached me with it and got the information here for them. And I'm going to meet with a couple of them next week to go over this. And we've also made an appointment with the county to talk to one of the gentlemen up there. So they can get this resolved. Plus, they're having some issues with the planes flying out and not going straight out over the water, a couple of them in particular. So we are also going to go down and meet at the airport and talk to the gentlemen that are down there flying. So it's kind of been just a error of, you know, what they think is going to happen without any information. And then when this article came out, they have a picture of a plane on the front of it. And they said it's a big plane, which it's not. but that's what their concerns were. So that is what I'm involved in right now, and hopefully that'll all be nipped in the bud and controlled before anything else happens.
Okay.
I had, is that a two-engine plane? It kind of looks like a B-17.
They're taking the, this is a picture of it.
I saw it flying.
Yeah, it's not very big. I mean,
well, it's been flying around.
Right,
yeah.
So now they're changing out the wings on it, and they're putting a new thing on it that they've developed to see how that's going to function.
Okay.
So, yeah, they generate $4 million a year, I think it is.
Yeah,
so.
Well, it's not really a very big airplane.
No.
I saw it flying around. I thought maybe it was mapping something.
Maybe hiring more employees. Yeah. No, they're not going to fly it there. Right in the article, it says it'll be flown out of...
They're not flying it out of there?
Uh-uh. No, they were not going to fly them out of there. They're just doing the building and the formation.
And it's nice to see the
They'll
economic
They'll be flying out
growth.
Of Edwards Air Force Base.
What?
Edwards Air Force
Base. Yeah, it's
Air
nice
Force
to hear
Base.
The local economic growth that a local company got a NASA contract. Kudos
about,
to you.
Yeah. You're talking about hiring an additional 15 to 20 employees, depending upon... what's going on, and most of those could be, depending on the season, it says it's going to hire full-time electrical and mechanical engineers.
Great.
So, yeah, it's more jobs and give us something new to talk about.
Okay. Jennifer?
I did attend the Oceano Advisory Council on Monday, but I understand that Vice President White will be reporting on that.
Okay. Karen?
Oh, okay. Some major stuff came out of Oceano Advisory. The first thing is the Oceano Advisory is attempting, as we speak, to put together a forum for Oceano on the Phillips 66 railroad oil issue. Hopefully in November, right? Yeah, in November. And when it gets all put together, there'll be flyers. Oceano Advisory will put flyers and posters and do everything we can to reach out to everybody and let them know it's occurring. Number two, we got a report on Front Street revitalization. And it's going ahead. They've actually selected a 6-member local community panel, and there will be they're planning the first public and panel discussion meeting on the draft implementation plan for the Front Street Revitalization Project in January of 2016. There, $220,000 has been allocated for planning. So at least the first step has been taken, and they hope to have, after the first meeting in January, by next May, a draft plan, and then in July, additional public and panel discussion meetings. And then the summer of 2016, they'll start actual possibility of closing 17th Street and go on with some other stuff. So at least there are steps being taken, very solid steps being taken on that.
Who gave that presentation, do you remember? Was it Gennaro?
Gennaro did,
yeah. Yes.
I saw him yesterday. He didn't say anything about that.
Yeah, he's
talked to him.
He's very enthusiastic. He's working on it very enthusiastically. And he's also on crutches because he had a little
accident
playing soccer.
Okay.
Yes. Number two, there was a report on the Air Park Drive Bridge Replacement Project, which, and I have to look and say, the county's replacing the bridge that was built around 1940. And the road will be closed. And I'm trying to see what the date of when they start this project is. Funding has come from the Federal Highway Administration, and Caltrans, and I hope they wait till after winter. So, but the new bridge will be wider, safer, and have pedestrian and vehicular access. Anyway, and the county's doing it, and it's just looks like a regular bridge project, but it should be wonderful. Two events occurring. Oceano Public Library is celebrating its 10th birthday. It's kind of hard to believe. On October 6th, 8th, and 9th from 2 to 5 p.m., people invited to drop in anytime. And there will be a program on Oceano's history being presented on the 8th by Linda Austin, curator of the Oceana Depot. And then on Saturday, October 10th at Ramona Park in Grover Beach, Fire Prevention Week will be marked with the Fire Prevention and Life Safety event, response vehicles, CHP training, yeah. Free smoke detectors, Smokey the Bear will be there, and they're going to have the CHP helicopter if everything goes well. So that would be fun, especially for the kids of all ages.
Well, can I also point out that for the Oceano Library, you can become a friend of the Oceano Library for, I think it's $50. You become a friend to help support the library and our local community. So with that, you get a little bag and a T-shirt. It's a good cause, so I would encourage anybody to join that. Anybody and everybody.
Did I miss anything?
Just me killing a bug.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Matt.
You appeared at the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation Special Meeting.
I did.
So why don't I turn it back over to you then?
I had the lovely pleasure of attending a special meeting. Yes, I wanted to make sure it was special and not emergency or not, you know, something else. A special meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Oceano does have a seat on that board as well. And the main issue was the billing with the Oceano Community Services District. And, of course, there was public comment and several people from the public, and we also did receive a letter calling the sanitation district to give Oceano a 60-day notice. And so this is a little baffling to a lot of us, since you give a 60-day notice if you have a contract or an agreement that has contractual language in it to another entity. That's been one of the problems with the whole sanitation billing problem, is that there isn't a contract that exists. So I want to make that clear so people understand that when they're calling to give Oceano a 60-day notice that they're pulling out from contractual services, that there is not a contract. So what we've done is we agreed to work on send out the bills for the sanitation district based on each billing cycle. So we're working once again without a contract. Well, not once again, still without a contract. And that's not unique. Arroyo Grande doesn't have a contract, nor does Grover Beach have a contract. So, but the finance directors have gotten together, have come up with a formula. They're looking over it. They're communicating to each other. And they're supposed to come back to that board with a contract. Now, another thing, too, is that people have called for that particular sewer service to be collected during your property taxes, which is twice a year. So instead of paying, say, in a regular residential home in Oceano, it's $34 per household. That is it 34 or 37?
Which charge?
Sand District.
The 30.
2 month charge.
30?
Yeah.
$30.
Approximately, yeah.
Okay, so that would come on to your tax rolls.
the county will not accept new vendors or new billing services until probably in May they start collecting data and will let you submit for your request that they do the billing for you and have it put on the tax rolls. So for people who say, just switch over to the county immediately, it is impossible. It doesn't work like that, and it's not going to work like that. And so people should not be under the impression that it happens immediately. In May, they'll usually start turning over the databases and starting to build the relationships, but that's not until May. So until then, I think that we're at where we are in this whole thing is just going from billing cycle to billing cycle. There was a memo that was sent from the interim plant supervisor, who's Mr. Clemens. He's now the interim
district administrator or general
district administrator manager. And the memo stated it was a copy of the check for $3,666. And it stated that Oceano had the discretion on whether to do the back billing for that one payment that was not billed for, or to do current. In the best interest of the Sand District, Oceano took the current billing, because if we had gone back and applied it to the back billing, then it would show a pattern and you would have two billing cycles where you had been delayed in payment. And I personally thought that was more damaging. And so I was in favor of applying that 3666 to current billing versus, you know, back billing, and then be laid on another billing, and then you have funders and people looking at inconsistencies in paying bills. And so we were trying to minimize the harm, but it is coming together slowly, surely, painfully. Mr. Ogren, would you like to add to this?
Yeah, as a quick update on staff efforts on that. So Administrative Services Director from Aurora Grande has sent out a draft agreement to the various agencies. Have had a little bit of follow-up emails with the Sand District. What I would anticipate is that the Sand District would take that agreement, review it with their attorney. If they have any edits to it, then the Sand District should probably take the first shot at it, and then circulate it to the other agencies to see if there's any final comments. I think that at least the discussions with myself and Aurora Grande seem to be moving in a collaborative direction. Input from the other agencies is still needed as well. So at least the strides are being made in order to develop an agreement that would then be applicable to all three agencies.
The one thing that I would really like to see happen is that the sanitation district take the lead. I think that is in order to move things along, instead of the partners having to
yeah,
pull the bull by the nose.
And it is my understanding
that the Sand District really should be taking the lead. And so
and my understanding is it will be on their agenda for next week. So,
right. My understanding is they're wanting an update. So
well, there should be.
We'll go from there.
Can I add something to that? I mean, obviously, President Lucy, I was involved in a number of these meetings, and I wanted thank staff of the Sanitation District and staff of the OCSD for keeping cool heads, and cooler heads prevail on this issue that was, I believe, a manufactured issue and something that probably didn't need to be developed in this particular way. And I think we ended up in a situation that this is part of the cooler heads observation. We ended up in a situation where we had at least one, what I believe was a Brown Act violation that happened here at our August meeting, and was warned. Mr. Minery said, you know, please don't do this. And that could have led to a cease and desist letter or something, but in order to keep, I think, in in order to the spirit of collaboration and cooperation and consensus building, I want to thank the staff and this board here for just keeping the cooler heads. And so I really appreciate that a lot.
Well, thank you, Director Guerrero. I think it's actually sort of points to a little bit of an advantage that, you know, community services districts have in terms of being able to get things on your board's agenda quicker. Some of the larger agencies, they have a much broader span of responsibilities, and their ability to agendize something real quick can be more challenging. But I do believe that this is a good example that when at a staff level we identify that there's an issue that's developing, that we simply get it on your board's agenda as soon as possible so that, you know, the elected officials that have been voted in by residents of Oceano can weigh in on how to deal with the situation. And I think that, you know, that quicker action certainly has been helpful in this particular case, because there has been some misinformation on it and some other posturing on it that seemed to be making a little bit of a bigger issue than it might have otherwise been. But again, being nimble at a special district level and being able to get it on the agenda and making sure to respond to it quickly, I think has been helpful in this situation as well.
Well put. Thank you.
Yeah. Karen. Question.
This is directed probably to Pablo. Mike. I'm using the mic, I thought. Sorry. Are there any other little, for want of a better term, any other little sleeping time bombs that don't have contracts that we could tighten up, any other little deals that we're involved in like this one? Because had there been contracts drawn up when they should have been 3 years ago?
Well, you know, the only other case that's out there right now in which we've addressed to a certain degree related to Five Cities Fire Authority, and that in prior years the funding formula hadn't been followed. For the current fiscal year, the funding formula is being followed, so that's been straightened out. But Chief Lieberman is identifying a couple other things that we need to talk about, some of the practices that don't, that look like they have been developed after the JPA was formed.
Yeah.
So he's bringing them all together. We're going to have an executive team meeting. I think he's doing a good job of identifying those issues so that we can talk through them. I do not consider any of those to be, earth-shaking type of issues. And so understandably, after the JPA was created and it moves into operations, issues come up, managers were dealing with those issues, and now Chief Lieberman is saying, look, we need to get them back to our elected officials. If we need to modify the JPA or if we need to take other formal actions, then we should be doing that. So it's been 5 years since the JPA has been created. Some informal decisions have been made, and again, the chief is looking at addressing those. So
thank you.
Okay, great. So thank you on that, and I think that will come together pretty soon. All right. Is there anybody who would like to do public comment on staff reports and director's reports? Ms. Tucker.
Train's on time tonight.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tucker, and I would only speak to the sanitation district item in that I was the person who wrote a letter, and I did recommend that the sanitation district issue a 60-day notice to get out of any contract. And the only reason I was under the impression that there was a contract is because you cash their check, and that is binding. So if there wasn't a contract, that was something you guys always argued, we can't do your billing without a contract, and then you took the check, I'm under the impression that there's some sort of contract or verbal agreement, and verbal agreements are contractual. So give a 60-day notice anyway to be perfectly clear that they do not want to do this again. The other recommendation that I made was to the SAN district to proceed on the process to get the billing onto the tax roll. Yourself, Mr. Guerrero, have both made mention and supported that as a cost-saving measure to the citizens of of the district. All three districts would save money, and three agencies, three communities would save money if that bill was collected by the tax man. And to get there may take all the way until May, June, or July with developing an assessment district, and you would hire a consultant under an RFP process. So that's my recommendation, is that they proceed on moving forward to get those bills on the tax roll. And the past bill could be identified as an amount of money that needs to be collected in arrears. And that's what the county does, is they collect after the service has been rendered. So, and then the last thing, I just found it interesting that Mr. Guerrero spoke to a potential Brown Act violation with the mayor of Arroyo Grande coming to your podium during a publicly noticed meeting and attempting to explain to you what had been presented to the Sanitation District Board was a misunderstanding on the part of then General Manager Rick Sweet, who developed the so-called short-term agreement that he thought that he could get two billing cycles on one agreement for one low price of $3,666. And I believe, Mr. Hill, that was his intent, was to explain to your board how they came to this place. Mr. Brown also spoke at that meeting. I'm of the opinion no Brown Act violation was even a threat. And when it is a publicly noticed meeting, they can contribute. You weren't making the decisions for them. They make those decisions in public at their meeting. So his contribution here would not have violated any law.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Anybody else have any public comment they'd like to make this time? Mrs. Austin.
I'm Linda Austin from Oceano, and I just, on the sanitation district, I think enough money has been wasted through this whole big, long fiasco. You have the agreement that's been worked out with the city manager board granny that's going to all three agencies. Let's just get it going and move on and do it. You know, you hear the tax rolls, but then what comes up? Hire a consultant, hire this, hire that. So there's thousands and thousands of more dollars, more confusion, more stuff, when it can just be so simple. It was simple from the beginning, but all those people that at the sanitation district made it the big fiasco it turned out to be. And I want to thank Matt and Mary for putting up with all of the what you had to put up with over there from the public and the other members, other member of the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Austin. I might have to say is that the members of Oceano, we haven't really had, you know, there's been people who have attended, but it really hasn't been much participation, mic participation. But I think the residents are watching the issue very, very closely, and rightfully so. So on that note, any more public comment? No more comments? I'm always open for comments. Okay. Let's do that. Consent agenda. What? What did I
do? I was just going to see if you wanted any clarification on the Brown Act issue or on the billing issues.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and do a clarification on the Brown Act, because I don't think that people quite understood where the multiple violations occurred.
Well, the concern I think that Director Guerrero raised and Ms. Tacker addressed is that there could not be a Brown Act violation when you had a publicly noticed meeting. And the issue is not whether or not this board was in danger of any Brown Act violation. The issue is whether the sanitation district was at risk of a Brown Act violation during that exchange. And the reason why is that this meeting was a publicly noticed meeting, but you had a quorum of the board from the sanitation district and that was not noticed as a sanitation district meeting. So you had a quorum of the board of the sanitation district discussing an item that was directly before this board regarding a contract that was also before the sanitation district. And the sanitation district, if they wanted that to happen, they wanted that exchange to happen, they could have noticed a special meeting here to be concurrent with your meeting, and then that would have been fine, but that did not happen. So that was the risk that that I noticed at the time of that. And again, I am not district counsel to sanitation district, but I wanted to bring it to the attention because we do have two members of this board that are also members of that body. So that was the concern.
And I appreciate the courtesy of letting know that there could possibly be a violation, because none of us want to intentionally do that.
And
Mr. Ogren?
I just wanted to, you know, express the observation that after legal counsel pointed that out, the one representative of the San District, the mayor of Rio Grande, did sit down and chose not to comment on it. Another representative chose to continue to speak. But
you need to respect the speaker. Yeah. No, nobody's talking when you're talking. Ms. Tacker, you are being so inappropriate.
Here we go.
You had your time at the mic, so now let the board discuss. Just be respectful for just one moment, one meeting. Go ahead, Mr. Ogren.
Again, it was the observation that after Mr. Minery had expressed possible concerns there, that the mayor of Rio Grande did sit down, did not comment any further. Another representative of Rio Grande chose to continue to speak, but at least part of them was responsive to the concern.
And I think part of that, when Mr. Brown continued to speak, it was for an item that was on the upcoming agenda the next week at the sanitation district, and it was here as well. And so that was the concern that gave rise to, you know, the thought that we may need to cure and correct. But I think in the interest of being the better neighbor, and in the interest of being collaborative and seeking consensus, that's why I applaud the civility of this particular board in not doing that, and continuing to move forward and trying to do the right things for the right reasons. And I think that's very important. So,
yeah, I think we've done a good job at keeping personalities in the back and just trying to get the work of the people done. Okay, so on that note, I'm going to put that one to rest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the consent agenda, is there anybody who would like to do public comment? Ms. Tacker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I did want to speak briefly to the minutes of September 23rd. And I know it's not reflected there, and I don't recall and wondered if Mr. Guerrero would be willing to restate the reason for his no vote that evening. And then the other item is your cash disbursements, and really it's your payroll. And for some weeks now, you've been without Ms. McGrath and Mr. De Leon, and it just leads me to believe, or to wonder, you used to have a personnel committee, and your personnel committee, I don't think, has met in 2 years. You do have these vacant positions. There's no job postings on your website. How long are you going to go without these positions being filled? Mr. Ogren was supposed to write job descriptions as part of the memorandum of understanding with your union. That agreement is going to be a year old this month, October, and I just haven't seen a whole lot of movement there. I'm sure something's going on in the background, but you know, what is the situation with openings at the district, and if you're going to do with fewer positions at the district, I think that has to be discussed here at the board level. So I look forward to that.
Is there anything else anybody would like to add to the consent items? No? Okay. And the advertisement for the job description, is it in this warrant pack or is it in the past one? Because I know it's old.
Clarification on a couple of items. On your closed session over the last several months, you had numerous items associated with the negotiation of the Memorandum of Understanding with SEIU Local 620. So obviously that's an ongoing deliberation of your board, which is appropriately conducted in closed session. The second issue, which is the advertisement of the vacancy positions, the speaker was incorrect. We have had it posted. We have done advertisements.
Right,
we've done interviews. We are currently in the final rounds of selection of the preferred candidate, and that placement may be imminent the latter part of this week. But again, that's a normal recruitment process where during a recruitment process, of course, we keep names confidential because people are often employed by other employers, and it's pretty common to keep that all confidential until a final candidate has been selected and employed. But that work is in process, and hopefully we'll have that one of the positions concluded this week.
And I do see that you do have the job advertising expense for the one position in there in this warrant packet. I just didn't see it in the last warrant packet, so I was just wondering where it was
so,
coming up.
You know, and I, as a little bit of an anecdotal side note, on this recruitment, I chose to advertise only on websites, monster.com and slowjob.com, not sharing how good. It's very cost-effective approach, and we had a wide range of very well-qualified candidates, so I was glad that that advertising process produce the number of candidates that we actually got to look at applications. And, you know, we did the traditional, you kind of a rough screening, and then you score points on you know, a group in order to come down to the final group that you're going to interview. And, again, I think that process worked out very well.
Great. So back to the consent agenda.
I'll move to approve as presented.
Second.
Do we need to do anything because I was not present at one of the meetings for the minutes?
You just abstained from the that on the 23rd.
Well, we need to do them separate then.
Yeah, so you
sure.
Can do the warrants. You can vote on everything but the minutes.
Why don't you just make a note? We'll make a note for the record that your vote is considered an abstention from the minutes that you
that I was not present.
Yes, for the meeting
okay.
Right there.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve as presented.
Seconded
by Director White?
Yes.
Okay, all those, do we want to do roll call? No? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining? And it's noted that Jennifer Blackburn abstained on the November,
September.
I mean,
September
23rd minutes. Thank you. All right. So, moving on to business items. Is there anybody who'd like to do public comment on business items?
There are no business
the
items.
The closed, yeah, right, no business items. Okay, so let's do future agenda items and hearing items before we go into closed session so people can go. So any future agenda items? Oh, none, okay. So,
I'd recommend taking public comment on items 10 and 11.
Okay. Again, I just called for public comment on 10 and 11.
Well,
but I'll do it again. Anybody having public comment on items 10 or 11? Okay. Hearing none. No future agenda items. No future hearing items, except for the garbage, which we already got that done. So I'd entertain a motion to adjourn to a closed session after
the legals.
Legal counsel has told us why we're going in and Mr. Ogren.
And after public comment on closed
session. I was going to get there. And anybody who wants to do public comment on closed session? Hearing none.
Okay, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus the City of Santa Maria et al.
Called back to order.
Okay. Reporting out of closed session on item number 9A, there is no reportable action.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn this meeting.
So moved. Second.
Okay.
Good night.
All in favor. Good night.
We return.